Welcome to A Taste of YU, and thank you for joining us tonight. I know for a couple weeks before Pesach, this is a new initiative that we're doing this year for the first time, which is for 2 weeks before Pesach. I think it's been 2 weeks before Pesach. Different nights, we have different schools at Yeshiva University presenting pre-Pesach Shiurim, and very nice new initiative. And tonight it's our turn at Stern College for Women, undergraduate college for women at Yeshiva University. And very exciting. I'm very excited to be presenting tonight with Nechama Price, with Professor Nechama Price, who is my friend and colleague and such a valuable member of our Judaic Studies faculty. I'm honored to be presenting tonight for Stern. Thank you all for joining. I'm honored to be presenting tonight because, you know, it's true that Yeshiva University has so many different schools and, you know, it's so many different components. And, you know, not to knock what everybody else is doing, but the Torah studies at Stern College and the undergraduate program at Stern College is really what I see as really the jewel in our crown, which, you know, the program, I mean, all the programs represent our values and our mission. And at the undergraduate programs are the programs that really, you know, we start with our students and build them and hopefully pass on the values that we represent at Yeshiva University, and, you know, continue the foundation and either start in some cases or continue the foundation of Torah that is so important as part of the Jewish people. And that's why I thought that something that I would speak about tonight is the idea of Pesach being the Chag of Jewish identity. You know, it's interesting. We talk about how Pesach, you know, is all about, you know, it's probably ranking as probably the most important Chag, where we really became the Jewish people. We developed, we started as the Jewish people, and it's really the holiday that represents the Jewish identity, which is so interesting because, you know, if you think about which holiday is probably known most, no matter what level of adherence you have in the, you know, among different segments of the Jewish people, it's probably Pesach. Like, probably every ShopRite across this country has the free 5 pound of matzahs that you get this week or the past month. You know, if you spend a certain amount of money, you know, everybody knows about Passover and the holiday of the Jewish people. But the question is, what makes it the holiday of Jewish identity? And I think that's just a note about everybody who's joining us tonight. Kol hakavod to you for joining on a Monday night, 2 weeks before Pesach. I hate to say this, but less than 2 weeks before Pesach. I was saying that all last week. And I think that, you know, Pesach is obviously known for so much prep going into this chag and much more than probably any chag, probably than any other chag put together, and all for just, you know, a little over a week here. And and you know, we clean and we shop and we cook and we turn over our kitchens and clean everything. And there's so much physical preparation that goes into preparing for Pesach that I think it's so important to also spend time preparing, not just physically, but also spiritually, and also preparing for the Chag in terms of learning and preparing ideas and things you could present. You know, the whole Chag is a Chag about, again, we'll talk about why Jewish identity, but passing on the Masorah and teaching and asking questions and answering. I mean, you know, the highlight of the Chag is the Seder or two Sederim, depending where you live. And it's all about teaching, and it's all about passing it on to our children and passing it on to the next generation, and the chinuch involved and the passing on of the Masorah. So I think a wonderful way to prepare for this Chag is not just cleaning our kitchens and preparing all our food, but also to prepare ideas and thoughts and what goes in, what's the whole purpose behind this Chag. And it's very much a part of the preparation that goes into it. So kol hakavod, 2 weeks before Pesach, joining us to, you know, to prepare not just physically, but also as part of your preparation for Pesach. I happen to like this year when Erev Pesach is Shabbos. It makes a lot of things more complicated, But I find that, you know, first of all, you're not going to the Seder exhausted because you had Shabbos. You know, you go into Shabbos exhausted, maybe because Friday essentially is Erev Pesach, even though it's not. But Shabbos is such a great opportunity to learn and start, you know, going through the Haggadah and think about ideas that you want to present at the Seder and at the Siddurim. So it's actually a nice way to spend some of that non-physical prep time, because that physical prep time ends Friday night before Pesach starts. So again, thank you for joining tonight, and let's learn a little. So the question is, what is it about Pesach that makes it so much a holiday, a chag of Jewish identity? Why? And I think that before, you know, we can jump into this, you should have the makorot, you should have the sources in the chat. I think it was posted in the chat. Thank you, Menachem, for posting them. Not going to go through all these. Don't get nervous. You know, I would actually love to hear Nachama Price's shiur after mine, but I'm actually in the middle of a graduate school class that I left early from and have to go back to when I'm done with this shiur. So unfortunately, I can't stay, but I don't want to take up her time. So don't worry, you know, there's a lot of sources here. I'm not even sure we'll get through all of them. But anyway, I like to start, you know, when we talk about Pesach, to start with the Nitziv's introduction to Sefer Shmot. Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin wrote a parish on Torah called the Emek Davar. And in his introduction, every sefer, he has an introduction, and they're wonderful. And he talks about he talks about another, you know, the names of the sefer. He particularly usually focuses on one name of the sefer and then explains why it's called by that name. And what he talks about in his introduction to Shmot, I recommend going through all of them, by the way. Bereishit is, you know, up there. Shmot is also great. And he talks about how Sefer Shmot is called Sefer Sheni. He says Sefer Sheni. If you look at the third line, Sefer Bereishit v'Chumash Sheni v'Sefer Kohanim v'Chumash HaPikudim v'Mishnah Torah, and he's quoting the Bahag, the Baal HaLachot Gdolot, and he says that these are the names of the Sfarim as the Bahag quotes. And the reason, and why is it called Sefer Sheni? He says, "Lamdenu bina, to teach us an insight into the Sefer. Shelo b'chinam shina Hashem b'sefer b'zeh ha-sefer. V'hayal Rabbeinu likro kulam b'mispar chumash sheni v'shlishi v'chulei or chumash shmot o inyan ha-misuyam kmo ki yitziyam mitzrayim or matan Torah." He says, either, you know, it's a little bit strange that he calls every Sefer by a certain name, but then Sefer Shmot is called Sefer Sheni, the second book. He said, either call each book by a numeric value, the first book, the second book, the third book, etc., or call the books by the name of something significant that happened in that book, like, you know, Sefer Bereishit, you know, because the creation of the world, or Sefer Kohanim, because it's about the laws of the Kohanim. But then Sefer Shmot should be called something other than the second book. It should be called something like Sefer Yetziat Mitzrayim or Sefer Matan Torah, you know, like you see in other books. Ela ba lamdeinu sheze Sefer biyichud hu sheni leSefer Reishit HaBriya ki hu chelek sheni mizeh haSefer. But rather, says the Bahag, that the book of Shmot is called the second book because it's inherently the second book. And he continues and he explains why all the other books have a name based on something that's happening in the book. And Shmot doesn't seem to be that way. But in fact, Shmot is, because the second book is very much telling as to what this book is about. Hainu bon nigmar seder bria, because this is basically Bereishit part two, says the Nitziv. It's the continuation, the completion of Briyat HaOlam, which is in Sefer Bereishit, and he says, "Ki tachlit haOlam bichla perush tachlit haOlam kula hu shehei uma achat chalak Hashem imo v'zelo nishlam ad sheyatzu Yisrael mimitzrayim uba'u letachlitam sheyu reuyim liot leor goyim olamidatam olamidam al yediat elokei tzulam." That he says basically Olam. He says basically Sefer Shmot is really just a continuation of Sefer Bereishit. The world was created because Hashem wanted there to be a Jewish people and give them the Torah, and it was for the sake of the Jewish people and the Torah, and that all didn't, the fulfillment of the creation of the world doesn't happen until Sefer Shmot. And that's why this is called Sefer Sheni, because it's the fulfillment. It's like Bereishit part two. And then just skipping down a little bit to the underlined, the second to last underlined line, Nimtza dematan Torah hu gemar habriya, that really the giving of the Torah in Sefer Shemot is the completion of Bereishit. Everything that happened in Bereishit now is being completed, and not just the creation of the world, by the way, everything else that happened, that Bereishit lays the framework of what is going to be fulfilled in Shemot. And now in Shemot, they are finally completing the whole purpose of creation, that they're at the point that they're ready to get the Bnei Israel, are ready to get the Torah, and everything that happened before is fulfilled. And that's, and he ends, last line, Nimtzatz Sefer Shemot, who Sefer Sheni LaHarishon. That basically Sefer Shemot is part two of creation of the world and everything that happens afterwards. I mean, think of all the things that are, you know, all the foundations that are laid in Bereishit. You know, Hashem makes promises to Avraham in Perek Tedvav of Brit Ben Habtarim, but nothing happens then. You know, he promises Avraham that there's going to be Jewish people, they're going to be enslaved, they're going to be persecuted, they're going to go through Galuyot, and ultimately they'll you know, it's the promise of eternal existence and also the promise of Eretz Yisrael for eternity. Even if we lose it at different times in history, it'll always be ours. All of that is fulfilled. I mean, not all of it, it's not part of it. It's still waiting to be fulfilled, but it's certainly fulfilled in Sefer Bereishit. I mean, in Sefer Shemot. And even when Hashem first introduces himself to Avram at the beginning of Parsha Va'era, and he says to Avram, you know, I appear to the Avos, Ushmi Hashem lo nodati lahem. You know, they didn't know my name. And of course, all the Mepharshim say, what do you mean they didn't know your name? Of course, they knew Hashem's name. But certain parts of Hashem they knew. They didn't know that he fulfills his promises. They know he makes a lot of promises, but they don't know that he fulfilled his promises until this generation, until Sefer Shemot. So we see again that Bereishit lays the framework of what happens, and Shemot is the continuation of what happens. I just want to throw in one other interesting thing that I'm not going to delve into, but you could think about something interesting. You could throw it at your Seder tables. I always, whenever I teach Shemot, I always, you know, as part of my introduction, talk about how, you know, Bereishit is all about the individuals, right? All about the individuals. There are so many characters, there's so many personalities in Bereishit, and that's the framework of the individuals of the Jewish people, starting with the emergence of Abraham. And Shemot on the other side is all about the community. There are no individuals really at all. I mean, there are a couple, you know, Moshe and Moshe's immediate family and Aaron and Miriam, but really the main character of Shemot is really the Jewish people and the emergence of the Jewish people. And you know, even when Hashem appears to Moshe at the Sneh at the beginning of Shemot, and he says, you know, I want you to go to Paro and get Bnei Israel out of Mitzrayim, and Moshe's response is, "Mi anochi keilecha Paro v'chiyotzei et Bnei Israel Mitzrayim?" Like, who am I to go? And he has all these arguments, you know, why he shouldn't go. And if you look at how Rashi understands the "Mi anochi" and Hashem's response to that, Hashem is saying to Moshe, "Lo shalchahi ki mishali." This is not about you, Moshe. This is bigger than you. You're part of something bigger than yourself. And all of this already was in the making back in Bereishit. So, and that's basically what Hashem is telling Moshe to tell Bnei Israel at the beginning of Va'era. Like, there's a history here. There's a past, there's a present, there's a future. You're part of something much bigger than yourselves. This is not about you, Moshe. This is not about whether you can speak well enough to go to Paro. This is part of the bigger plan, you know, kind of coming out of Purim, what Mordechai said to Esther in Hacharish Tacharishi's speech. Like, you could be part of this or not. I mean, you know, Hashem's talking to Moshe, you need to be part of this. Although I guess ultimately it was Moshe's choice. He stopped arguing with Hashem at some point, but this is bigger than you. This is, you know, something that I have set in motion already, you know, back in Bereishit, back at the creation of the world. So the thing that I was going to throw out to you, which again, I'm not going more into detail about, but you could think about it. It's a good discussion question. You know, if Shemot is all about the community, while Bereishit is all about the individuals, why is the Sefer called Sefer Shemot, the Book of Names? Which is also interesting. It's a fascinating question, because if you look at the whole beginning of Shemot, you know, here it's called the Book of Names, and yet the names are blaringly missing. You know, we don't have anybody's names. Vayelech ish mi beit Levi, vayikachet bat Levi. The whole emergence of Moshe is a man from the house of Levi who marries a woman from the house of Levi, and their names aren't even mentioned in Shemot. And then they have this child whose name is also not mentioned. And the name of Moshe, he's the Yelad, he's the Na'ar. And then the name of Moshe is only mentioned when he's only called by the name Moshe, when another nameless person, Bat Paro, who we know from the Midrash is Batya, but Bat Paro was the one who saved Moshe, and she's also nameless. So here you have all these nameless people, and yet the book is called the Book of Shemot. If you want to discuss it further, you could email me, but I'm not going into that now. But think about it. It's, I mean, I think it has to do with what the focus is, and you know, and yes, the names in Shemot are really the names in Breishit that lay the foundation of what's happening in Shemot. But there's a lot of interesting ideas there. Anyway, I can't get caught up because we don't have so much time and a lot to do. If you look at the second source, the Hakdama of the Ramban calls the Sefer Geula, and basically, you know, different than the Nitziv, he says that Hishlima Katuv Sefer Breishit Shu Sefer Yitzirah. He says no, that Sefer Breishit ends. I mean, he also talks about Maaseh Avot Siman Labanim, that everything that happens in Breishit, then I mean, everything that's promised in Breishit, then is fulfilled in Shemot. But what he says is, it will skip a little bit. Everything that happens in Breishit is hinted to what's going to happen in Shemot. And he says, he says that this is called the Book of Geula. Shemot is called the Book of Geula because it's really the story of the redemption from beginning to end. And that's why he says the beginning, he says, and that's why this book is called the Book of Redemption. And that's why it starts with the Jews coming down to Mitzrayim again, even though it already mentions it at the end of Shemot, because if we're going to talk about the redemption, we have to start at the very beginning of the redemption, which is when the Jews came down to Mitzrayim. And his point of difference with the Nitziv, you know, is talking about how this is Sefer Sheni, because the continuation culminates in Matan Torah. Then the Ramban says, no, it's after Matan Torah. The redemption doesn't culminate when they leave Mitzrayim. If it was the Book of Redemption and they were redeemed when they left Mitzrayim, it would have been over after Parsha Peshalach or at the beginning of Parsha Peshalach. But his point is that they're not really fully redeemed until they're in a good place with HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well, as until they're redeemed, not just physically, but spiritually as well. And that's why that doesn't happen until the end of the Sefer, because Sheba'u al Har Sinai ve'asu ha-mishkan ve'shava HaKadosh Baruch Hu HaKadosh Baruch Hu ve'yishra shechinato b'nehem az shavu ha-malat avotam shem sod eloki aleihem ve'hem ha-merkava, etc. V'lachin nishlam ha-sefer hazeh v'yishlimo inyan ha-mishkan. And that's why the Sefer Geula, says the Ramban, is Sefer Shemot, is called Sefer Geula, the Book of Redemption, because it starts with the beginning of the redemption and ends with the end of the redemption, which is not when the Jews leave Egypt, but when they are one with Hashem, when they build the Mishkan, and Hashem has given his quote-unquote, you know, stamp of approval with Kvod Hashem, Aleihet HaMishkan, and that's the end of the redemption. So the story of Mitzrayim is really the emergence of the Jewish people, but really not just the emergence for the first time, but the fulfillment of everything that Hashem had promised in Sefer Breishit. If you look at our next source in Sefer Shemot Perek Yud Bet, really I should have started from the beginning of the Sefer. This is basically when it starts. The story of Yetziat Mitzrayim, I mean, certainly it starts with Hashem sending Moshe. It's at the beginning of the Sefer when Hashem tells Moshe to go to Paro and take them out of Mitzrayim. But up until Perek Yud Bet, Hashem has been giving and giving and giving, and there's been no commitment on Bnei Israel's part. Hashem has been, you know, trying to prove to Bnei Israel that, you know, redemption is coming and that he's their God. And, you know, back to that beginning speech in Vayera when, you know, he gives Moshe this unbelievably beautiful speech. I think it's one of my favorite speeches in Tanakh. And he's basically tell Moshe, tell Bnei Israel, like, you're part of something bigger than yourselves. Like, I've been there for you. I am here for you. I will be here for you. Like, even though you don't even know me yet. But you know, Ani Hashem, I call it the Ani Hashem speech because he keeps repeating Ani Hashem, talks about the past, present, future, and then future, past, right, in chiasmic structure. But anyway, that's a different idea. And he's promising them that he cares about them, and he's going to redeem them. And it's such a beautiful speech. And yet at the end of that whole speech, it says, "V'lo shamu Moshe mikotzer ruach mi'avodah kasha." Bnei Israel couldn't hear it. They were in such a bad place. You could bring the best therapist and you could give the biggest pearls of wisdom, but if you're not in a good place that you can hear the message, it's going to go in one ear and out the other. And that's what happened here. So Hashem wants to prove to them everything that he is promising them. So after nine makos of proving to them that he's ready to redeem them, that's when Hashem says, okay, before I bring the final 10th and final makah, and I bring you out to, you know, bring you out of the avdus of Mitzrayim, I need a little bit of commitment on your part, or more than a little commitment, but I need you to meet me part of the way. And that's Perek Yud Bet. And Perek Yud Bet is the instructions now for Korban Pesach. And Hashem tells Moshe to tell Bnei Yisrael that they're going to be doing Korban Pesach. Vayomer Hashem Moshe ve'el Aharon. That's not in the source. It's the beginning of Perek Yud Bet. I'm just telling you the context. And he says, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim. He tells them about Rosh Chodesh. And you have to mark this month, which is the month of Nisan. And he says, Dabru al kol adat bnei Yisrael leimar ba'asor lachodesh hazeh v'ikhu lahem ish sel lebeit avot sel abayit. This is how it starts. Take on the 10th day of the month of Nisan, take for yourselves yikhu lahem, and they should take for them. And again, this is yikhu lahem. It's not just for me, it's for them also. They're going to be part of the Jewish people. With doing this mitzvah of Korban Pesach, they are now choosing to be part of the Jewish people, to be redeemed, and with everything, with all that the word redemption means, not just physically, but spiritually as well. And they're going to take this sheep, and they're going to sacrifice it and bring it as a korban to Hashem, and then spend the night eating it, you know, everything else. We're not going to go through all the details of it. And if you look at source number three, I'll just do the underlined, you know, you're going to take this animal, you're going to slaughter it. V'haya hadam lachem la'ot al habatim asher atem sham v'ra'iti et hadam u'pasachti alechem. And you're going to take the blood of the korban pesach, and you're going to put it on your doorposts where you are that night, and I'm going to see the blood and pass over your homes, and there and velo yebachem negef lamashchit v'hakotzi be'aretz Mitzrayim, and you're not going to be hurt by this last makah. And then continuing, shivat yamim matzot tochelu, right? You have to eat matzah, and you can't eat chametz, ki kolocha chametz benichrata nevashayim Yisrael. And you can't eat chametz, and we'll end with this, you know, soon we'll get to that, why chametz is such, you know, such an isser on Pesach, when it's not us or the rest of the year, and all of a sudden Pesach you get kares if you eat it. And then you zayin v'shamartem et hamatzot ki be'etzem hayom hazeh hotzeiti et tzivotechem me'eretz Mitzrayim, etc. Okay, and then it continues that if you eat chametz, then you get kares. And then Moshe goes on and he gives this message to Bnei Yisrael. Vayikra Moshe lechozik Bnei Yisrael vayomer lehem mishchu kachu lachem tzon lemishpachotechem v'shachatu haPesach. And Moshe then gives this message to Bnei Yisrael: go forth and take this sheep and sacrifice it to Hashem. So there's a lot of discussion here. It's interesting. There are three differences between what we call Pesach Mitzrayim and Pesach Dorot. Pesach Mitzrayim was that first Pesach in Mitzrayim, and Pesach Dorot was the Pesach, you know, that we're celebrating now in future generations. So number one, this whole idea of Mishchu Kechu, go forth and take a sheep. This idea of going forth and taking a sheep is not, you know, we have to take a sheep in future generations, you know, during the time of the Beit HaMikdash, certainly. But what of this mishchu, like go draw forth and take a sheep? That was only told to Bnei Yisrael in Mitzrayim. And also the idea of taking the sheep on the 10th day, that Asar LaChodesh, the 10th day is something that is a phenomenon that only took place in Mitzrayim. We don't have to take the sheep in future generations on the 10th day. Unfortunately, we don't know. We haven't done, you know, actual Korban Pesach. We just have symbols of Korban Pesach. But that was only done in Mitzrayim, not in future generations. They could take it any time in the future. And of course, the third one, the most famous one, is the blood on the doorposts. You know, in future generations, like, we're not putting blood on doorposts. You know, we have symbols of the blood at our Seder table, but even when there was a Beit HaMikdash and there was Korban Pesach, nobody put the blood on the doorposts. So these different signs were essential for the Jews in Mitzrayim. Why? So if you look at the Medrash Rabbah in source number four, the Medrash says, "V'chena tamotzei liYisrael shayu b'Mitzrayim hayu ovdim avodat kochavim v'lo yu ozvim otam." He says that Bnei Yisrael were really ovdei avodah zarah in Mitzrayim. It's interesting because we know the famous Medrash about, you know, them not changing their clothing and names. I mean, they were really assimilated. For all, that's not even exactly the quote from the Midrash, You know, the Nitziv points out very, very correctly, you know, obviously they were assimilated. They weren't just staying, they didn't stay in Goshen. They moved out into Mitzri neighborhoods. And how do we know that? Because when it says that, you know, Passover, what does Passover mean? That Hashem passed over the Jewish houses. You know, if they were living in their own little, you know, Jewish community, we wouldn't have needed that. So they were living among the Egyptians. They were assimilated. And basically they needed to change their loyalties with Korban Pesach, and they did worship the sheep because the Mitzrim worshiped sheep. And what Hashem wanted them to do now, if you look at the last two lines of number four, klomar mishchu yedechem me'avadah kochavim ukechu lachem tzon v'shachatu Eloheihem shel haMitzrim v'asu haPesach. They needed, by taking the sheep, they were now destroying the Avodah Zarah of Mitzrayim that they had worshipped before this, and now they were taking it and they were using it to worship Hashem. And by doing it, they would show Shebekacha Kadosh Baruch Hu Paseach Aleichem, and Hashem would pass over their houses because they would show that they're changing their loyalties. And this is why they had to take the animal, you know, I mean, different Mepharshim talk about why they had to take the animal on the 10th day. They had to prepare and get, you know, get busy with mitzvot. Every time they checked that animal to make sure there wasn't a mum, they got another zchut, they got another mitzvah. You know, they were showing again that their loyalties were now with Hashem and not with the Avodah Zarah of Mitzrayim. It's interesting. The Alshich says something really interesting, and then I'm just going to have to move. But the Alshich says in number five, he says, Klomar, he says, why did they take it on the 10th day in Mitzrayim? I thought this was really interesting. Now, remember, Bnei Israel were not, they had to have bris milah before they left Mitzrayim, right? They had, you know, hafru brit milah in Mitzrayim. They got rid of bris milah. People were not circumcised. So the Alshich says something really interesting. He says, the reason that they had to designate the animal on the 10th day, he says, Klomar shemalu Yisra b'layla shal shechitat ha-Pesach. They had to have a bris milah before they did Korban Pesach, they had to do the mitzvah bris milah. They had to be circumcised. He says, Ki lakach hikdim l'kichato l'shechitato arba'a yamim kidei sheyeh lahem zman limol. Ki latzei mimitzrayim tzarich yeh lahem koach v'lo yicholim. He says, fascinating. He says, they needed to have a bris milah, which they hadn't had. They needed to have it before they got busy with Korban Pesach. And they couldn't have a bris milah the night they were leaving because they wouldn't have been well enough to leave. They needed to have a bris milah. We know, he says in the next line, Yadua ki amal hu chole adavar shlosha yamim. We know it takes 3 days that, you know, you're really sick with bris milah. We know that from Avraham when he had his bris milah at age 99 in Parsha Vayera. And then you have to, it takes a while to heal. It takes 3 days. And on the fourth day, they could leave. But so this way, they had to take the animal and designate it on the 10th day so they could, and he says the reason they needed to do bris milah, they needed to designate the animal before they do the bris milah, he says, because sur me rava ase tov, they have to get rid of the bad before they could do the good. The good meaning to do a bris milah, they had to get rid of their old avodah zarah. So what's the best way to get rid of their avodah zarah? Shecht your old avodah zarah, and bring it to Hashem. But they couldn't have a bris, they couldn't shecht it and then have a bris milah and then leave because they would be too sick. So the Alshich says they had to designate it on the 10th so that they were, that was the sur meirah. They were designating this sheep that they used to worship. Now they're giving it to Hashem. Then they can have a bris milah, and then they recuperate for 3 days, and then they're ready to leave, you know, the morning of the 15th. So it's just, it's an interesting take on, you know, what these date, why these dates were important in Mitzrayim. Again, doesn't apply to the future because no one's having bris milah, right before Pesach. Another point here is the blood, bra'iti et hadam. Now it's interesting, I didn't bring the Rashi here, but Rashi says that, bra'iti et hadam, Rashi says that, the question is, who sees the blood? Right, v'ra'iti et hadam. Hashem says, "Upasachti alechem." Like Hashem needs to see the blood on the doorpost. So Hashem wants to see, says Rashi, that you're busy doing the mitzvah, but He really wants you to see the blood. There's a whole question about whether the blood had to be on the inside or the outside of the doorway. And the nafkamina is the practical difference. Well, there's no real practical difference, but the difference is, who's looking at the blood? Are Bnei Israel looking at the blood while they're eating the Korban Pesach, or is Hashem looking at the blood from the outside? And of course, we know Hashem doesn't need the blood to know where the Jews are living, you know, and who's doing Korban Pesach. And that's why Rashi says, no, the blood was on the inside, it was bifnim, and Bnei Israel needed to be seeing that blood while they ate the Korban Pesach as a sign that they were changing their loyalties, that now they're, you know, involved with this mitzvah of Hashem. And then Hashem sees their involvement and the fact that they're, you know, busy with Korban Pesach, and that's what it means, Ra'iti Et Adam. I see what the, you know, even though the blood's on the inside, I see that blood, and that shows me that they're dedicated to me now. And the Mechilta adds another piece. He says, on the underline, the Mechilta says in number 6, he says, Ra'iti Et Adam ro'e ani dam akedato shel Yitzchak. And that's another whole idea, that Hashem sees the blood. What does that mean? It reminds him, quote unquote, of the blood of the Akedah that Avram, well, look what Avram was willing to do, how dedicated Avram was to Hashem, and the promises, all the promises that Hashem made to Avram about his descendants now are going to be able to be fulfilled because Bnei Israel are now showing that dedication that Avraham showed. They're showing that sacrifice that they are leaving their old Avodah Zarah and doing something dangerous, which was taking a sheep that was worshipped in Mitzrayim and now slaughtering it and bringing it, and not just slaughtering it and bringing it to Hashem, but publicizing it, taking that blood and putting it on the doorposts, and that shows that they're dedicated to Hashem like Avraham was. And the Cheskuni in 7 says, Vayadam lachem la'ot, sh'atem mekayimim et ha-mitzvah. He says, it's interesting, Cheskuni adds another piece. He says, you know, it's a sign for you, again, that you are doing this mitzvah, again, to even to strengthen Bnei Israel. Like, this is what you're doing. This is a sign for you that you got this. This is the decision, the choice that you're making. Cheskuni adds another piece that I thought is very interesting psychologically. Davar acher, la'ot v'zecher, sh'shafchu atimchem, right? It's a sign. It's a sign and a remembrance for you that of all the blood that Paro that spilled of yours in Mitzrayim. Like, in case you're getting cold feet and you're thinking like, wait, maybe this wasn't so bad in Mitzrayim. No. Look at that blood and remember all the blood that was spilled. Don't have a selective memory now because you're getting nervous. You know, it's an interesting psychological idea. And he says, that's why Ra'iti Et Adam Afal Pi Shehu Bifnim. Hashem is seeing the blood, but even though it's on the inside, Hashem sees it because that's a sign that you're busy with your Osek B'mitzvah. Rav Hirsch, I'm not going to read inside in number 8, but Rav Hirsch says something really interesting. He says, why is the blood put on the mezuzot and the mashkof? The mezuzot are the door posts, and the mashkof are, I think it's called the door jam, the top of the door. So Rav Hirsch, I'll just read the first line. He says, Hayesodot shabarei konena lehem etamo, heim lo yishim apratim kim batei Yisrael mishpachot shavem bachar lenachalalo. He says that that Pesach, you know, what's going on this night of eating the Korban Pesach and our Siddur, which is, you know, our commemoration of that, is not about the individual people, but it's Batei Yisrael, back to the, you know, community as opposed to the individual. It's Batei Yisrael. We're celebrating the community. I mean, so much of Pesach is a community, familial celebration. You can't eat Korban Pesach by yourself. You know, this is why, again, Corona is a yotzei min haklal, and God willing, you know, we won't have Pesach alone anymore. People won't have that alone anymore. But, you know, Pesach, and that's why it was so hard. It was so difficult that Pesach was the first chag that we celebrated like this, which is the chag of communal involvement and the community celebration of the community. I always tell my students, you know, when Hashem promised Avraham, your children will be like the stars in the sand. And why does he say both? You know, it's not just quantity. The Torah says it's quantity, but it can't just be quantity because, you know, there's not so many Jews in the world. So like, that was the big promise Hashem was making to Avraham, that your children are going to be so many like the stars in the sand. So it's got to be more than that. And one of the beautiful ideas is that your children will be like a great community like sand, because sand is great because there's so many billions of grains of sand all together, but also great individuals like the stars, that they'll, you know, sometimes when you're a great community, you lose your sense of individuality. And sometimes when you're a great strong individuals, you lose your sense of community. And Hashem's promise to Avram is that you're going to be both. And that's the holiday of Pesach, that we're celebrating this communal Batei Yisrael, passing on the Mesorah, teaching our children. It's all about the community and passing on the Mesorah to the next generation. So he says, the reason that the blood was put on the doorposts and the door jamb is because the sides of the door represent the walls of the house. And the top of the home, it's all about the home. And the top of the door represents the roof of the house. And what we're celebrating Pesach time is that Hashem is protecting us from the sides and the roof. What do we mean by that? The roof is the elements. nature, teva. You know, we have a roof over our heads, and Hashem protects us from natural, you know, disasters and, you know, difficulty. And the walls of the house separate us from society. And that's a separation that Hashem also protects us inside our home. We have our values, regardless of what's going on outside the walls of our home. So it's the walls, the spiritual, and the, you know, the whole relationship with Hashem is the spiritual and also the physical. So it's a very nice idea. And then we talk about how, if you look at source number 9, Perek Yud Gimel, Hashem tells Moshe, you know, Moshe tells Bnei Yisrael, Vayomer Moshe el Ha'am, Zachor et hayom hazeh asher yetzatem mimitzrayim mibeit avadim, ki bechuzek yad hotzi Hashem etchem mizeh, velo yachal chametz. Right? And we'll talk about that in a second. Also, Moshe tells him, remember this day that Hashem took you out of Mitzrayim from slavery, because he took you out with a strong hand, and don't eat chametz. So two parts of that. First of all, what does that don't eat chametz have to do at the end? And we'll talk about that in a couple minutes. But the chozek yad, Hashem took you out, the chozek yad. What's its yad chazakah that we keep talking about? And then that's followed, you know, continued in pasuk tet. V'haya lecha le'otah yadcha l'zikaron b'necha, l'man t'yatorat Hashem b'ficha, ki b'yad chazakah hotziach Hashem Mitzrayim. Make sure, you know, this is a source for tefillin. Put a sign on your arm and between your eyes, that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, that the Torah should be on your lips, and you should be immersed in this, and because Hashem took you out, you know, biyad chazakah. So I don't have time to do all these next few sources, but just to understand, you know, there's a whole discussion about what this, you know, what's the point of, you know, putting the story of Mitzrayim in a mezuzah. You know, the Rambam, for example, in Hilchos Mezuzah talks about the consistency, the constant reminders, you know, of Hashem, that again, this, what are we celebrating Pesach time? It's not just that we left slavery physically. It's our relationship with Hashem. It's the fact that Hashem chose us as his nation. It's the Arba Lashonot Geula, Hotzeiti Veitzalti V'Galti V'Lakachti, which is in that speech in the beginning of Va'era. It's physical redemption, you know, Behotzeiti, that's physical, leading up to, you know, V'Lakachti and everything in between, which is spiritual. I'm taking you as a nation. And these are constant reminders of Hashem in our physical lives. And in fact, the Ramban says it's not the constant reminders, but the big events help us remember Hashem in our everyday lives. But again, because we're celebrating this relationship that we have with Hashem, it's not just the slavery, which sometimes gets lost in translation when we talk about Pesach being a holiday of Jewish identity, of, you know, the Jewish holiday. It's not just because we came out of slavery. It's because we were redeemed and we have a relationship with Hashem. And Rav Hirsch says in 11, he says, Lo yadenu hi shegala otam mitzrayim, ki yad Hashem palazot. That's why yad chazakah and putting tefillin on your arm is to remind us that it wasn't us that took us out, ourselves out of Mitzrayim, but it was Hashem. This is not really a commemoration as much as it's a recommitment. Talk about recommitment ceremony. That's what Pesach is. We're recommitting to Hashem, and we're saying, where would we be without you? Like, this is not that we're so great that we were able to defeat our enemies, but that you, Hashem, without you, we wouldn't have been able to do this. And that's why we put the sign on our arms and between our eyes, you know, parallel to your mind and to your heart, that we are committed to Hashem. And that's why, and ki b'chozek yad, because Hashem, the whole point is that Hashem took us out, b'chozek yad, Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, that it wasn't us, but Hashem took us out, b'chozek yad. And in fact, you know, some of the Farshim talk about b'chozek yad means by force. There's a reminder to us that maybe we didn't want to come out, like Hashem had to push us out. Like, look what we gained. We gained a relationship with Hashem. You know, look at the Nitziv in source number 12, ki b'yad chazaka, shelo titpalei, lama hitzrichanu HaKadosh Baruch Hu kochach mitzvot. Hashem wants us to give us all these symbols to remind us. Sometimes we forget. It's easy to forget that, you know, why we're here, you know, and that's what, you know, Moshe tells Bnei Israel in Dvarim. It's very easy to fall into kochi ve'otzem yad yasal yatachayel hazeh, that I'm here because I'm so great. This is not about us. It's like what Hashem is saying to Moshe. This is bigger than you. You know, this is not about you, Moshe. This is bigger than you. And we need signs. We need all these signs to remind us ki b'chozek yad hatzian Hashem Mitzrayim. And in fact, Rav Kook, we'll come back to the Chametz as the last point. Rav Kook in number 13, I don't have time to go through this. You could look at this on your own. He says, Rav Kook says that this is something, it's Bnei Israel, you know, abandoning their physical work of being physical, avadim tzaparo, and then becoming Ovdei Hashem is you know, choosing the spiritual, and not the physical in this case. And this is something that Yetzirah Mitzrayim represents, the triumph of the spiritual over the physical. And this is something that we continue in every generation. It wasn't just Mitzrayim, but it's a struggle that continues in every generation. And this is what we have to remind ourselves. You know, we sometimes, thank God in Judaism, we, you know, we have a nice balance of physical and spiritual. But sometimes, you know, the struggle comes down to choosing something that we might want physically at the expense of what's good for us spiritually. And Mitzrayim reminds us that Pesach reminds us of the triumph of the spiritual over the physical. And that leads us to the last point of the, back to in source number 9, we did the Pasuk, where Moshe says, Zachor tayom hazeh asher yetzatim Mitzrayim mibeit avadim, ki b'chozek yad hotzi Hashem etcha mizeh, v'lo yachel chametz. Right? Remember that this day that Hashem took you out of Mitzrayim from the house of slavery, because he took you out b'chozek yad, v'lo yachel chametz, and don't eat chametz. It seems like a non sequitur. What does lo yachel chametz have to do with that? And the answer here is because chametz, and I'm sure, you know, you've heard this in different contexts, but this is a very powerful idea that chametz represents the ego. You know, think of the ingredients that go into chametz versus matzah. It's basically the same ingredients. You know, we always have these discussions. We don't sell chametz mamish. Do we sell our bag of flour? Like, you need flour to make matzah. You know, that's an ingredient. The only difference that goes into chametz is the yeast, which really just, it, the only difference is not even the yeast. The yeast is just a chemical reaction to allow it to rise. It's the air. It's the extra air. It's the amount of time that the chametz got to rise. That's the difference between chametz and matzah. So, you know, I think it's interesting because we call arrogant people sometimes, oh, they're full of hot air, you know, not real substance, but you like puff yourself up. That's what chametz is. The rest of the year, it's fine. You know, healthy ego is important. But Pesach, there's no room for that. Because if you eat chametz or matzah, what you're basically saying is, it's about me. You know, I'm so great. I'm sitting here like a king. You know, that balance between sitting here at our Seder tables like a king and recognizing that we wouldn't be here without Hashem, that it wasn't kochi v'otzam yadia saliyat ha'chayel zeh. That's how we eat the matzah, because we were rushed out of there. You know, v'lo yachol itmameh, we had to run out because we weren't the ones victorious. Hashem was getting us out of there. We were passive in this whole thing. We watched while Hashem redeemed us. Again, the active part of it was Korban Pesach, where we were choosing our loyalties and choosing to dedicate ourselves to Hashem. But otherwise, Hashem did everything for us. And that's why matzah is so important. And that's why chametz is so important not to eat. Because while the rest of the year, it's fine. It's interesting. It's an interesting concept. Like the rest of the year, this thing is totally fine. And then if you eat on Pesach, and this, you know, 8 days, that's it. You get kares. You're cut off from the Jewish people. Well, because on Pesach, there's no room for that. There's no room for that ego that that chametz represents. And that's why in the Haggadah, we see in number 14, matzah zu she'anu ochlim hashuma, this is the most important part of the Seder. And that's why if you don't say this, right, you might not be yotzei yidei chovatan. Like, this is important. You have to understand what this means. Ashum shaloi speak v'tzeikam shalvatenu lachamitz ad sheniglah alei melech malchayim lachim HaKadosh Baruch Hu uge'alam shenemar v'yatsu etzapatzeik asher atziu mitzrayim ki lo chametz. Right? Look at that. We ate matzah because it's not chametz. Ki lo chametz. This is not about the ego. Ki gorshumi mitzrayim v'lo yachlu litameyad. We were kicked out. We were thrown out. Not because we were victorious, because Hashem took us out and they were throwing us out because they didn't want to have to deal with God anymore. It wasn't because they were scared of us. It wasn't because we redeemed ourselves. It's because of Hashem. And that's why we eat matzah, ki lo chametz. It's not chametz. And then finally, Rabban Gamliel haya omer, kol shelo amar shlosha dvarim elu b'pesach, lo yada yitzei chovato, ve'eluhin pesach matzu mara. We don't have time to go through the other ones, but like each one of these represents certainly pesach matzah in a very powerful way that This is the message of Pesach. If you don't understand why we're having these symbols and we're eating these things, then lo yatzai yidei chovato. What's chovato? To recognize that it's not about us, that we're part of something much bigger than ourselves, that we're part of something that started with the creation of the world, that we're part of the Jewish people with a history, with a heritage, with a relationship to Hashem that started way before we came into the picture. And that's why Pesach is such a powerful holiday of Jewish identity. That's what we're celebrating. Yes, sure, we're celebrating that we're free now, and we were sent out. You know, we were not slaves anymore, and we're now free. But why? It's the relationship. It's the recommitment that we have with Hashem every year, that we're recommitting ourselves, that we're going back to the story of the beginning of our relationship. And it's interesting because we go through the whole history. We go way. We're bringing Psukim from Bereishit. Because it goes way before we came into the picture, before the slavery in Egypt. This relationship started way before that. And that's why we bring Psukim about the Bikurim, by the way. Because that's, again, gratitude. What's the point of Bikurim? We're taking the first of our fruit and we're bringing it to Hashem. And this is all about us, you know, showing our gratitude for the relation to everything Hashem has done for us. And again, recommitting ourselves to that relationship. And that's why Pesach is really a holiday of Jewish identity. And that's something that I think is so important to discuss, you know, and take this message and pass on. This is the message you want to pass on to your children, that you're part of something in the future generations. You're part of something bigger than yourself. So on that note, have a Chag Kasher V'Sameach. Thank you for listening. And it's my honor to pass on the proverbial mic, the online mic to my friend and colleague, Professor Nachama Price. And I wish I could stay on, but I did tell my professor I'd go back to class. So
don't worry.
Thank you everybody for joining, and hatzlacha with all the physical and spiritual prep. This is a good way to start.
Yeah.
Have a good one.